The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Belton Johnson, our Green Zone football analyst, and he's joining us on the phone right now. Belton, I'll explain what we were doing earlier today, just in case you missed it. So I had a friend of mine on, and he hosts, he's competed, he's done barbecue over the years, and his name's Ryan Lindley from the Getting Sauced podcast.
Okay.
And I had him give me some barbecue tips for Canada Day for tailgating. And I said to him, I said, when I get these tips, I'm going to jot them down, and I'm going to bounce them off of Belton and get his take on this. There's one of his tips is rather controversial.
Okay.
Okay, so here's his first tip. Most of these I think you're going to agree with. Don't put a cold steak on a hot grill.
Oh, absolutely. Don't do that. I'm all about getting it up to room temperature. I would say that with pretty much any meat other than, you know, maybe burger patties or something, right?
Okay. All right. Tip number two. He's a big charcoal charcoal over gas or propane. He loves the charcoal.
Well, you know, I'm from the South, so that's where I start with charcoal. I prefer charcoal any day of the week. I know I have a pellet smoker and everything, but I would much still prefer charcoal still.
Yeah. He's a big charcoal guy. He's saying, listen, if you're just an average barbecuer, go with the natural gas, go with the propane. But he said, if you're going to get into it and you're going to get serious about it, he says, you got to go charcoal. Okay, his third tip, Belton, is slow down. He's always on my case about this because I can cook a steak in about 3 minutes. So it's not about speed.
No, and that's the thing I like about barbecuing or anything is, you know, more so for brisket or, you know, pulled pork and everything. All right, slow down, you know, get that temperature right and sit down, listen to some blues, have a couple beers, slow down. I'm all about that. Slow it down.
All right. And he also hates using accelerants. He doesn't like people using like lighter fluids and stuff like that. So he said, stop using accelerants.
Hey, I don't disagree with that one either. I have been at barbecues where, you know, tons of accelerant was used, and guess what the food tastes like?
Yeah, he's like, stop using accelerants. Okay, now this is where we draw the line, because he's a friend of mine, and I did a podcast with him for years, and when he found out I was doing this, he hounded me, and he's been bugging me for years about this, and I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to stop. But he's like, the beer can chicken is a myth. He says it does nothing for the taste of the chicken.
And I think I'll agree with it as far as taste or anything, but I do think it will probably make it moist just with the steam and everything. No?
There we go. I told him. I said it makes the chicken moist.
I think so. I had some nice juicy chickens using a beer can. And I think my wife, sometimes she puts seasonings and things in there.
Yes! Like, yeah, you throw
I've never done the seasoning. My wife has, but
okay.
I think you season it, you know, prior to putting it over the apparatus there and everything, right? And that's where your flavor comes from. That, but I do think the steam of the beer.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would think, but
he has the whole science behind it, and the beer doesn't boil. At some point, though, if he ever comes to Regina, which I can see that happening in the next couple of years, the two of you can get together and we can have an all out Donnybrook on the beer can chicken. By the way, I don't know. I'm a huge blues fan as well, and I don't know if you've ever listened to this record, but I'm going to get you to put it on your list of to dos. Muddy Waters, Hard Again, my favorite blues album of all time.
Muddy Waters. Okay, that sounds like something from down Mississippi there.
Chicago blues, my friend. Johnny Winter was a huge Muddy Waters fan, and he went to Chicago, found him in the 70s. I think it was 1976, 1977 that they recorded the record, and said, there's no reason why you shouldn't have a bigger career than you do, and I'm going to take you and I want to record you. And he took him into the studio and put out what I think is the best electric blues record of all times. And so there you go. Put that on your list.
Hey, blues and barbecue, beer, it all goes together, man.
There you go. Now, let's talk about the game. Too much talk about the barbecue. What did you like about what the Riders did on Saturday night, Belton?
Run the ball. I love every bit of the running game, you know, from A.J. Ouellette, who had, I believe, what, 139 on the ground, to Tommy's touchdown, Stevens. You know, I like that one play where they faked it to Ouellette and he, you know, doubled back as the running back, ran the ball there. The run game was on point. I can't even tell you how many yards they averaged, but loved it.
Fantastic. So a little bit of conversation about Jake Mayer's performance. His first start as a Rough Rider, he's got a win. So he did what he needed to do. But have you got thoughts on Jake's start on Saturday?
I think I was hoping for a better start. You know, being that he's a guy that's had 45 starts in the CFL, right? And, you know, I just saw, you know, he did okay, right? Like you said, he did not lose the game, but I'm sure there's a couple throws he would like back. The one that really sticks out to me is the one he had down the deep side there. Robustelli was wide open, and he just threw it just a little bit too far to the outside where Robustelli caught the ball,
yeah,
and went out of bounds, right? Or because just the trajectory of the throw. But if he throws that right on point, that's a home run hit to where Robustelli scores a touchdown, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. You got to give Robustelli some credit for going up and grabbing that, though. That was quite
absolutely
a catch. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So for me, I was curious, and I don't know if there was a strategy behind it, Belton, but Trevor, I mean, everyone knows that Trevor Harris, he throws the long ball, but he kind of, his bread and butter are those short sort of routes, and he likes to move the ball that way. It looked like Jake was attempting the long ball a lot more than, say, Trevor would in a regular game.
And that's what I felt like as well, Luck, you know, because, you know, again, with Trevor Harris, I felt like it was like 1, 2, 3, throw the ball, right?
Yeah.
And with Jake Mayer, it was more 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. Bomb it.
And I'm okay with that, right? I thought the O-line held up pretty good, but they did give up, what, 3 sacks. And I do think some of that was Mayer holding on to the ball a little bit too long. But if you can, again, if you can hit those deep shots, get the big plays, I'm all for it. It's just he wasn't connecting with a lot of those big plays.
And from a strategy perspective, what do you think the thought was there? Maybe they wanted to test his arm a bit? Or
what, the strategy with throwing it deep?
Yeah, the long ball, yeah.
I think that's just his thing. I think he likes to do that. And because I think the strategy was really to run the ball, which they did. I think Ouellette had, what, 23 carries, which – it's got to be a, you know, maybe a team high this year in 4 games where he's run it 23 times. Usually it's around that 17 mark, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he did get 139 yards, and that's the first time that A.J. Ouellette, as a Saskatchewan Rough Rider, has broken the 100-yard mark in a game. So that was definitely a lot of people predicted that, though, leading into this game. A bounce back week for Brett and the kicking game. Did you also notice that, Belton?
Hey, that's my boy, man. You know he was going to bounce back, right? you know, yes, he went 5 for 5 for field goals and was, what, 2 of 2 on the extra points.
Yep.
Great bounce back. You know, let's hope he keeps on track and keeps getting better and better as the season wears out, because guess what? They're going to need him, man.
And speaking of, it's not something to be proud of, but at the top of the CFL are the Rough Riders and the number of penalties this season. So week 4, they lead the league. Ottawa's just behind them. As a coaching staff, that's got to frustrate Coach Mace. And is there something that you're seeing that It's spread out between the offense and the defense. Like, what's going on with this team and the penalties? Because in closer games, this is going to be an issue down the road here.
Oh, and it was almost close in this game, if you ask me, if it wasn't for that pick six by Tavon Campbell, right? Like, that was the turning point of the whole game. And, again, BC, they were still knocking at the door right there at, right before the half. So the penalties, that's something they're going to have to work on. I know it was an issue last year, right? And I think the players know it. Certainly the coaches know it because, you know, that's how you stop drives or end drives and everything. And, again, this is just something we're going to have to watch as the season wears on here.
Hey, the other thing that I want to touch on quickly is we've been getting, calls and Green Zone fan line has opened up today about the fact that this is a 4-0 squad. So the Riders are back from the bye week, Friday, July 11th. They'll be hosting the Calgary Stampeders, and they have the potential to go 5-0, and that has only happened 3 times in Rough Riders franchise history. It's only happened 6 times that the team has gone 4-0.
Wow.
Belton, what you're seeing on the field right now, does this feel like a 4-0 squad?
Look, I picked them to go 13-5, win the whole thing this year, right? So I'm going to say what I'm seeing, they still got things to work on, which isn't a bad thing. But, you know, I was concerned kind of early on here, the first 3 games, Eastern opponents, right, weaker teams. The BC Lions, they didn't have Nathan Rourke or anything. But this team has found ways to win, you know, through injuries and everything, right, the penalties and, you know, the missed field goal kicks. They have found a way to win. And I don't think it gets much better than that, because once they really get it together, look out, man. They're going to be dangerous all the way.
Come on. Let's go. All right. Okay, Belton. And again, I got to get you together with my buddy Ryan Lindley from Getting Sauce Podcast, and then you guys can have a discussion about the beer can chicken. All right?
Hey, I can give you one more tip.
One more tip. Okay, nice.
Let your meat rest. When it's done cooking, just let it rest for about 15 to 30 minutes or so, depending on what you're cooking, and you're going to get some of the juiciest meat you ever had there. Well,
Belton, this whole barbecue thing is just a test in patience, isn't it?
That's all it is, man.
All right. Thanks for your time today, my friend.
Hey, have a good one, Lock.
Take care, my friend. Awesome. Belton Johnson, once again, the Green Zone football analyst. And if you want to weigh in on whether or not this is a 4-0 squad or you've got a barbecue tip, text or call the Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Jamie's off for the week. Takes the bye weeks off, so I am flying solo. And we've had a conversation today after the win on the weekend, beating the BC Lions. Are the Riders, what you're saying, a 4-0 team? Murray sent this in. He said, we are a 4-0 team. We won our last game with our backup quarterback and a backup receivers. That's actually one thing that I think needs to be highlighted from this past weekend, is that receiving core has had to dig into its depth as well. So they got to get some credit. The defense played really, really well. And OJ Ouellette, I mean, ran the ball like crazy at a career day. So it was easy to forget the fact that receiver core is not the starting receiver core, and they are stepping up big time. This is also added by Murray on this text. Mosaic Stadium is a first-class facility that ranks up there with many NFL stadiums. And listen, I know that the question of sellouts and attendance comes up, but I will say this, and again, I wasn't here at the old barn, and I didn't get to witness games, before Mosaic, but I was impressed. The first game I saw here last year, I was blown away by this facility, and it feels like a football stadium to me. So I don't have anything negative to say about the stadium. So I appreciate the support on that one, Murray. And we got this from Tony. We've been doing barbecue tips And the beer can chicken controversy has rattled the text line. Tony adds, want a good beer can chicken? Use a Mott's Clamato Caesar can. It's 10 times better than the beer. And I'd be willing to bet that when Tony does that, he tastes the clam and the spices from the Caesar in the chicken. All right. Coming up next, John Shannon from 100% Hockey as we close in on NHL free agency tomorrow. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Jamie's off for the week. Stuck with me. Free agency tomorrow, noon Eastern. There has been a lot of activity already. It has been absolutely insane today. And we're going to focus on the Panthers because this is a conversation that we're probably going to continue to have. It's not going away. Aaron Ekblad, 8 years, $6.1 million per year. Sam Bennett, week ago, staying in Florida, 8 years, $8 million a year. Ekblad could have got more. Sam Bennett could have got more. Looks like Marchand is going to stay signed with the Panthers. Rumor is he's going to sign a 6-year deal. There hasn't been any confirmation on that, but that's been floating around. And when players are sitting down and they're putting together a list of the reasons why they should stay or they should go from a team, I've been saying that tax-free state has to be a huge incentive, and it gives these teams an advantage. That's my opinion on it. It has to be at the top of the list of priorities. John Shannon from 100% Hockey joining us, and I want his thoughts on whether or not the tax-free state of Florida and others is an advantage and a consideration when players are making decisions about whether to stay or go.
Well, I think it does get some consideration, but I think it gets overblown because let's remember, you get taxed on the games you play in which state or which province. So, in theory, Aaron Ekblad will play 43 games in Florida. 41 for his home team and then 2 in Tampa.
Okay.
So, but then when you go to New York State, you pay New York State tax. California, the same thing. So it's not as totally divisive as everybody thinks it is. I also think that there are different factors. If you're on the big end of a contract and all you have to do is look at how many commercials Connor McDavid has versus how many commercials Aaron Ekblad has, there is an advantage to playing in a hockey crazy market in a hockey crazy country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it in the end, in many ways, it might work out a lot closer to even than people realize.
Well, and Canadian players in Canada are paid in U.S. dollars, so that sort of takes that conversation, that off the table as well. But it still is frustrating. And Oilers fans, I'm one, are going to be comparing the dollars that Oilers defensemen make. Right.
Yeah.
So, and when they both come down within the same couple of hours, and I know that Ekblad and Bouchard are two completely different defensemen, but still, anyway, I will move on.
The apples to oranges, it's an apples to oranges scenario. First of all, both players wanted to play in the cities that they signed in, obviously. Aaron Ekblad did not want to leave. And so he was prepared to take a pay cut in order to stay. So that's in many ways why things happen, and what it speaks to in many ways is not necessarily the tax situation, not necessarily living in the United States versus living in Canada.
Yeah.
But what I really think it speaks to, Locker, is the camaraderie and the chemistry that they've built in Florida, that people don't want to leave, that people are happy there. Look, Sam Bennett could have made a lot more money on the open market and stayed for 8 times 8. And so I think that this is a classic case of a team and a group of players understanding what they have going for them, and they took and Aaron Ekblad took a hometown discount in order to try to win a third consecutive Stanley Cup.
John, before we move on, do you think that Marchand's going to end up staying in Florida too?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, he's going to get rich. And it, could it be in Florida? Could it be in Boston again? Could it be in Toronto? Could it be in Los Angeles? I think all of those teams will express interest in him. The only team that can really talk to him right now is Florida. And so that's Brad's going to have to make that decision, whether it's he wants to wait or he wants to do the deal with the Panthers right now and have a pretty good situation that we've already talked about in terms of the Ekblad deal.
You bring up an interesting point with the only team that Marchand can talk to right now is Florida, just based on what's happening with Marner. And the Leafs have been busy over the last little while. They lock up John on Friday, Matthew Nyes today. We don't need to get into the details of those contracts, but do you think that the league is going to make an example of Vegas and Marner if they can dig up some sort of tampering conversation here or proof of it? You don't think it's going to happen? Okay.
No, because he's been traded to Vegas now.
Okay.
It has been done, and that he will go and play and sign an 8-year deal. The deal was done with the Maple Leafs, 8 times 12.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that deal gets traded to the Golden Knights, and we still haven't heard what the compensation is. And the other thing is, I do think that Brad Marchand's going to sign in Florida. I think he's going to stay.
Wow. That's unbelievable. What did you think of the NHL draft on Friday? Well, on Saturday.
I didn't watch much on Saturday, I'll be honest. And one of the reasons was, I'm not sure that fourth round pick for the Jets or the Oilers was at the top of my list of who he was and what he was.
Yeah.
So it's difficult for me to sit there and watch it and just watch some names. I thought Friday was a gallant attempt to try something new, but I certainly hope that we end up going back to the old style of a full arena with all the teams on the floor of the arena, talking to each other, kind of almost like a political convention.
You kind of lose something too with the player not being able to connect with the team. That just I don't know. It was clunky. I mean,
it was. It was. And but this is what the teams wanted to try. And I do think that there will be a movement amongst the teams to go back to what we've seen in past years. So we'll see what the vote is this time. The vote was 26-6 the last time, so that's a pretty good majority that says that most of the teams wanted to try this remote draft. And I'm sure from a planning stage and from a logistical stage, the teams like this system. But I because all of their computer workings, all of their research, as everything's in their own home office, and you can have a lot more privacy there than you can on the floor of an arena. But at the same time, I think they lost a tremendous impact to the hardcore hockey fan who ends up watching these types of things.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, so this decentralized draft experiment looks like it might just be that, just an experiment. That's good news. The other thing that I have on the list of things to talk to you about, just quickly, is there anything from the new CBA? Obviously, it hasn't been completely ratified yet, John, but there's some interesting things in there, the full-time e-bugs, the 84-game schedule, no player dress codes. You can get a little bit deeper into it. They're shutting some of the LTIR loopholes.
I think that's the biggest thing.
That's huge, eh?
I think that's the biggest thing, that you have to remain cap compliant in the playoffs. Now, what that means is on a daily basis, the NHL is going to have to keep a better track of rosters, and the leagues are going to have, the teams are going to have to be a lot more open about who's on their roster, and then when they file the lineups, that they are cap compliant. Because what you don't want is, you don't want to name a lineup at 6:30 and at 6:45 you get a call from Central Registry of the NHL saying, "Oh, you guys are over. You can't play that lineup." So now we're at least a season away from that occurring, but it's certainly, to me, a step in the right direction.
I got a couple of things I want to touch on with you. I'm a fan of the podcast with you and Darren, 100% Hockey. And you had a conversation with Vernon Krause. Now, not many people are going to have any idea who that guy is, nor are they going to understand what his connection is to hockey. And so I hung in there, and I was like, okay, all right, we'll all give you guys the benefit of the doubt here. They're talking to somebody that wants to move a hockey team to Atlanta. It sounds crazy, but he's an Atlanta business owner. And if you had asked me before that conversation, John, whether or not I thought it was a good idea to go back to Atlanta, I would have said, you're insane. You're crazy. By the end of the conversation, I was like, they're going back to Atlanta.
So there's a few things to consider about our discussion last Wednesday with Vernon Krause. First of all, he's invested, and he wouldn't put the number out publicly, but I can tell you, he's invested more than $80 million already in this, to buy the land where the arena is going to go, and then another $30 million in research and logistics. So that's one aspect. And design, right?
That doesn't guarantee him a team.
No,
but that's a lot of money.
But that's a lot of money. When you consider that the Columbus Blue Jackets got into the league for $80 million, you know, he's been warned that the price for an expansion team could be between $1.5 and $2 billion. He doesn't flinch at that. The other thing is that this team would not play in downtown Atlanta. It would play in the suburbs, about a 30 to 40 minute drive from Atlanta. And if you've ever been to Atlanta, Atlanta has the worst traffic in the history of mankind. And it's in a county called Forsyth County, which is the 12th most prosperous county in the United States. So there's lots of people and there's lots of money. And what they're trying to create is an area like we've seen at LA Live, like we've seen at Maple Leaf Square, like Ice District in Edmonton. They're trying to get something like that. And this is called The Gathering at South Forsyth. And he thinks he can pull it off if he gets a team. And that's a classic chicken and an egg situation, Locker, where he'll get the arena if he gets the team, and Gary's saying, well, if you get the arena, you'll get the team, given the price. So everything has to fall into place properly. They're going to meet with the commissioner this summer, and hopefully we're going to get closer to an understanding of what a 33rd team in the NHL will look like.
Couldn't believe it when I heard that there's a possibility of a team. Third time's a charm? Going back to Atlanta. One champ daily here on the Green Zone. I'll be chumping Bettman and the NHL. I'm thinking you already know where I'm going with that. And I'm champing Pierce Morgan. It'll make more sense in a minute here. All right? This is 980 CGME and 650 CKO.
You two are winners. Big winners.
I think you're shagadelic, baby. You're switched on. You're smashing.
You tried your best, and you failed miserably.
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning.
You're an idiot.
You're a bad person.
All right, champ and a chump. I'll start with the chump. Ekblad, 8 years, $6.1 million. Sam Bennett staying 8x8. Marchand staying. You can't tell me. I don't care what anybody says. I've been harping on this. Keep in mind, I'm an Oilers fan. They just lost to Florida. Marchand staying in Florida. Clearly, they are making this decision, and Florida has an advantage over other teams like Nashville, tax-free, like Texas, tax-free. They have an advantage when they sign players. Just compare the deals that they're... Look at what Bouchard just got. Anyway, we can move on. And I am champing Pierce Mor- I am not a Pierce Morgan fan. I actually don't like him at all. But this interview with Jake Paul... He gets our champ today.
I'm a killer. I get in the ring with the best people. And you get in the ring with a guy who's 50. He's literally nearly as old as me. The only proper boxer you fought was Tommy Fury, and he beat you.
Fought multiple boxers with professional records, including Mike Tyson himself.
Peak Tyson, you wouldn't have lasted 10 seconds.
And you versus going to the gym, you're still a fat ass. We can make up hypotheticals. You should go to the gym. If you went to the gym,
I've been twice this week.
You don't think I can beat Mike Tyson? I don't think you go to the gym.
I think you're a great YouTuber.
You think that your opinion matters.
Hmm. Well, why are you doing my show if it doesn't?
Oh, I'm just taking your audience to sell pay-per-views. I don't give a f- dumbass. This is a business enterprise.
Cheers, Jake. Really enjoyed that.
I have never been a fan of Jake Paul. Drives me absolutely insane. I have never been a huge Pierce Morgan fan, but at least Pierce asked him the questions that needed to be answered, that asked, I should say. Jake Paul and that whole Tyson thing, what a debacle. I can't believe that kid makes money doing these staged fights. They drive me insane. Anyway, all right, again, I will be on my own this week. Jamie's got the bye week off. He'll be back next week, so... I thank you for everybody putting up with me. I thank you for all of the tips that we got today for barbecue, not only from my buddy Ryan Lindley, but also Belton, and a number of tips that came in on the text line. So I appreciate that. I'll be trying some of them out Canada Day. Happy Canada Day, everybody. Enjoy the day tomorrow. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.